Fab Lab Podcast, episode 53, Turnaround. Welcome to the Fab Lab Podcast, where we focus on the business side of your stone shop so you can achieve higher profits and lower frustration inside your business and more life outside of it. Welcome back to the Fab Lab Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Crowley, and as always, I'm excited and honored that you tuned in. And so, but I'm not here alone. I'm back with our co-host, Wes Rice. Wes, welcome back to the Fab Lab Podcast.
Hey, Aaron, great to be back. Looking forward to this episode.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to be great. We're going to continue the story that we began telling last week in episode 52, Trainwreck. And so before we get to that, though, you know, in your first inaugural episode of being on the Fab Lab Podcast, you posted an invitation last week. And tell us, did you have a response?
I did. I actually got a lot of responses. The question was, what topics do you guys want to hear in the future episodes? We got one from Innovate Stones Incorporated in New Jersey, and they ask, how do you cut costs in the shop?
Fantastic. That is a question, relevant question, that everybody in this audience, if you're cutting countertops, if you own a stone shop, if you're managing a department, how to cut costs is super relevant. So we got some thoughts on that, and I'm going to share those thoughts at the end of the episode, so stay tuned. But now I want to mention a word from our sponsor, FabricatorsFriend.com. You know, it's summertime. End of June, we're getting into the warmer weather. Historically speaking, the stone sleeves, the flagship product for Fabricator's Friend, the original product for FabricatorsFriend.com, was a seasonal product. Guys didn't tend to wear those in the summertime because, you know, it's warmer out. They're not wearing long sleeves, so they don't really need to stay dry. In fact, you know, it's kind of nice to have that cool water raining down on you when it's super hot. But, you know, the advent of quartz and the resins in that slurry and the advent of fiberglass mesh on the back of countertops has changed that. And there's a very interesting development. Stone sleeves are now a year-round product. So if you've got fabricators out in your shop that are grinding fiberglass off of those counters, if you've got fabricators that are grinding, shaping, and polishing quartz and getting that resin residue, that slurry on their arms, and they'd like to keep it off of them, consider getting your crew stone sleeves. It is a fantastic product. Now it's a year-round product. They don't have to go on the shelf for the summertime. And so when your fabricators are comfortable, they're more productive. And there is nothing more uncomfortable than having fiberglass mesh ground into your arms for the rest of the day and even into the next day. And so the stone sleeves are a great way to protect against that. So check out FabricatorsFriend.com and support this sponsor of the Fab Lab Podcast. Now, back to the episode. Today, we're going to talk about the turnaround. Now, just to set it up in case you didn't listen to last week's episode, episode 52, where we told the story of the train wreck, where we had an absolute epic disaster in 2018. I recommend that you go back and listen to that. It's going to give you some context. But really, the last episode ended with me letting a general manager go and then calling a company meeting the next morning. And so we're going to pick up there today as we talk about the turnaround and what the response was and whether or not the response worked. Did we recover from that train wreck? And so company meeting, night before, I let our GM go. He asks me not to tell anybody else what's happened so that he can leave gracefully. Next morning, Friday morning, I call a company meeting. And I've got to share what's going on. I got to share what's happened. So, Wes, you were in that meeting. I'm curious to know what was going through your mind. What was your first response when I shared that news that fateful day last September?
Well, after hearing that news, I had two emotions. First was fear. The second one was anger. Thoughts of, am I next? And do I want to stay here? Do I want to be on board with this company in the future?
Okay. Fear and anger. I definitely was feeling some of those emotions as well. Probably fear was the dominant emotion. Anger, really, at myself, at letting things get to the point that they had gotten to. But honestly, more than that, the sense of being isolated, the sense of being alone was by far and away the most intense emotion I was dealing with in that meeting. Here's 15, 20 people in the showroom, out of the blue. What do you mean? Things are so bad, we had to let our GM go. I had been almost completely out of the company for 2.5 years. I was not the leader. Nobody reported to me. In a sense, I felt like a stranger stepping back into this role, letting their beloved leader go. And by the way, I'm your new boss. And I walked out of that meeting with an extreme sense of isolation and with the weight of our response entirely on my shoulders. There was no one else to turn to. There was no one else to to share that burden with in that moment. And so the response, that was the loneliness, that the response that we undertook was going to be entirely on my shoulders. And so I'm going to talk about the three most significant responses I made in that situation that I believe contributed to the turnaround. And just so you know, we did turn things around, but it wasn't clear at that point. So walking out of that meeting, I had to make a whole bunch of decisions. But today I want to share what I believe to be the three most important and the three most significant, impactful decisions that I made that contributed to the turnaround. And so I'm going to share those today. Number one was returning to the fundamentals. Having owned and ran this company for many, many years, there was a certain way of doing things that we had drifted away from. And number one, we had to return to those fundamentals so that we could return to our previous performance. Number two, the 3D view, the understanding of the number of dollars that the company had to generate on a monthly, weekly, and most importantly, a daily basis to be financially viable. And number three, cost cutting. That was the most difficult decision to make, most difficult decision to carry out. So we're going to talk about that, returning to the fundamentals, the 3D view, and cost cutting. So returning to the fundamentals, in those days leading up to that decision, I was assessing our quote volume. It had been more or less unchanged from the previous year. What had changed was our sales. Our close ratio had been declining. We were generating enough leads to support the business. We were not closing enough business. And so first thing I did was, what has changed? Well, what had changed was we had deviated from what we had always done. We've always been really successful at converting inquiries into on-site appointments where we present the value. We have a sales presentation called the 8 Standards of Excellence, and we close an unbelievably high percentage of those leads. We had drifted away from that. Our sales staff had changed, and our new salespeople were gravitating towards having people send drawings. We were quoting, competing on price because there was no opportunity to convey the value in our sales presentation, and so our sales suffered. So that was number one. We had to return. And see, as an owner, I had this intuitive understanding. I had this history. I had this understanding. I had this innate knowledge of what works and what doesn't. And fellow fabricator, fellow stone shop owner, you do too. This is a really powerful point here. You know what works in your business. The problem is when we delegate that work can begin to drift. And you get other people into those positions doing that work. They can bring their own opinions into that work. They can bring their own experiences into that work. And if you're not on it and your company drifts from the way that you know works, the results are going to change. And that was the first thing that we had to correct. And so right out of the gate, we got what was left of our sales department together, and we immediately returned to those fundamentals. Scheduling on sites, ruthlessly walking the client through the need to actually have that on-site appointment so that we could convey the value, we could present our sales presentation and what it was that justified the higher price so that we could hopefully generate the sales that would allow the company to survive, to stem the bleeding, to stop the decline, and ultimately have a turnaround. And so that was number one, and we did that. Right out of the gate, we saw an improvement. We started to increase the number of on-sites that we were scheduling, and we started to increase the number of sales that we were closing. But we also had to understand the relationship between our quote volume and our sales, because we had been losing money all year. And so I had looked at a 9-month record, if you will, of what our quote volume was. And our sales, our close ratio had actually suffered. It had declined. It had dropped below what our normal performance was when we were doing it the way we knew to do it. And so I had to make this assumption going forward. If we return to the way we know to do this, can we reasonably expect the same outcome? And so we were closing on average about a 52%, or our close ratio was about 52% of leads. And so I took that quote volume and I forecasted that forward. And this leads into our second point, understanding what the daily dollar demand was or what it needed to be for us to, you know, get the company profitable again. So let's just say we had been averaging $200,000 a month in quote volume. At 52% close ratio, if we could get back to that historical average, we would be in theory closing about $100,000 a month in sales, in revenue, that we would then have to not only sell, but we would have to schedule, template, fabricate, and install, and collect on. So we had this new baseline to work off, and this segues into our second point, the 3D view. We had to reestablish that sales forecast, that 3D view, the daily dollar demand. We had to take that $100,000 target and then break it down weekly and then break it down daily so that our sales department could be focused and scheduling. If you do the math on that, I'm just using those numbers because they're easy to do off the top of my head. $200,000 in quote volume equals $100,000 in sales. So we've got to figure out a way to install $100,000 worth of work every month. So we break that down by week. It's $25,000 a week. And then you break it down by day. We got to generate $5,000. We can't just sell it. We got to install it. And so this 3D view allows the focus of the entire company, not just the sales department, but everybody in between the sale and collecting on that so that we have the money to pay the bills. We had to return to that crystal clear laser focus of every single day, in theory, we've got to generate, and it was more than this, but I'm just using this for the sake of simple math, $5,000 a day. And we've got to manage the work then, the activity of scheduling, templating, fabricating, and installing, had to keep pace with that sales. And so that was the second decision that I had to make. We readjusted our daily dollar demand in terms of that monthly goal. We recalibrated the business so that we had a crystal clear focus as to what we could generate. We believed we could generate $100,000 a month in sales, in theory. Then it became a question of how do we become profitable on that volume? That leads us into the third point, the cost cutting. So we return to the fundamentals, producing a predictable sales volume. That sales volume was then broken down. And I would recommend, if you haven't listened to episode 12, we did an entire episode on this topic of the 3D view, this daily dollar demand, focusing on the dollars that you're generating, not the square feet. So episode 12 goes into great detail on this subject, and I recommend that you spend some time listening to that if you're intrigued by this concept. It was instrumental in us turning things around. Had we not had that focus, we would have been floundering in too general of a sense, but we had that laser-like focus. We got a new sales target, everybody, sales department, production, installation, and we began to schedule and do the work accordingly. So that leads me to cost cutting. The problem with reaching those sales targets and those installation targets, if you will, still left out the fact that our expenses exceeded what I thought we could reasonably sell. We were carrying too much overhead, too much staff, too many expenses. And we had to finish the equation. We had to continue this decision making, this really difficult series of decisions, so that we could remain financially viable on that new sales target. And so that's cost cutting. And as I look back, I managed to survive the Great Recession. And the benefit of having been through that season, I learned something really important. We made ultimately the same decisions that we made in this turnaround in response to the train wreck. We just made them in slow motion. So we very slowly cut costs, way too slowly over the course of 2 years, 2008, 2009. We looked for any reason not to cut costs. Pie in the sky, hopefulness. Well, if we can just increase the number of leads that we're generating, maybe we can increase the number of sales that we're generating so our daily dollar demand will be higher, which means we have to cut less. When in the end, we needed to be cutting, and we didn't cut fast enough and we didn't cut deep enough. And what that led to were two terrible years financially responding to that. And this time around, in this turnaround, the cost cutting, what I learned, what I believe the decision had to be, it had to be fast and it had to be deep. And so I literally walked out of that meeting that morning knowing that not only do we got to return to the fundamentals, not only do we have to reestablish a new daily dollar demand, we've got to cut costs to get in line with that. And we don't have the time for pie in the sky hopefulness. Well, what if we increase the daily dollar demand? That means we don't have to cut as much. I had the benefit of that past experience to be dedicated to cutting fast and cutting deep to get our expenses in line with that new sales target. Let's just call it the $100,000 a month. So if you take that $100,000 a month baseline, if you're projecting your own company, if you're in a situation where you're losing money, this is the math equation. It's really simple. What can you reasonably sell? And you've got to subtract from that the profit that you need to generate, the salary that you need as an owner, and then all of your costs, all of your expenses necessary to produce that $100,000 a month in revenue. And at that point, walking out of that meeting, our expenses exceeded what I believed we could reasonably sell going into the fall. And so I had to cut. this is a real number. This is not a hypothetical 200,000, 100,000, 25,000, 5,000 for simple math. We had to cut $40,000 a month out of the operation to be profitable on that new daily dollar demand. And I had already made a big dent in that by letting our GM go, but I had to cut another, I had to cut the balance of that. It equated to $40,000 in additional expenses had to be removed from our operation on a monthly basis for us to be profitable on that new sales forecast. As difficult as that was, as painful as that was, as much as that, every fiber of my being wanted to avoid carrying out those decisions, it had to be done. And so, in conclusion, did returning to those fundamentals, did reestablishing a new daily dollar demand, and then cutting costs to get them in line with that sales forecast and that daily dollar demand, did it work? Well, fact is, we didn't know if it was going to work until we had been through the month. And so we reset that going into October. We readjusted our forecast. Our daily dollar demand was completely changed based on what I thought we could sell if we returned to the fundamentals. And then we had to produce it, and we cut staff. And so we were having to produce that dollar volume with fewer people. And so it was a real struggle. It was a real strain. But I felt as though it's math. We got to figure out how to generate these dollars with keeping our expenses in line so that we can turn a profit and start paying off the debt that we had incurred during the train wreck of 2018. So you go, that's October 1st. We start October with a new program, a new sales forecast, a new daily dollar demand, and all this cost cutting. It wasn't until the third week of November that we actually had a P&L to determine whether or not it worked. And I am here to tell you that 7 weeks later, we got a P&L from the bookkeeper, and we had turned a profit, an actual fantastic profit. In fact, on lower sales that we had forecasted the previous 9 months of the year, it was one of the most profitable months we'd had in 2018, even on lower sales, because we had our costs in line with that new forecast, and we produced it. And I'm also, this is the whole essence of the episode, Wes. Now, you're here the whole time, but you may not have been privy to the financial sort of realities. Here it is, the end of June. This will be the ninth consecutively profitable month we've had since the turnaround. And so I can genuinely say we had a turnaround. We turned thing around. We had lost, and I'm not going to tell you on this episode how much we lost at the end of September in 2018. You have to go back and listen to episode 52 to hear that number. And I'll just tell you this, it was above six figures. It was huge. Major losses, many months of significant losses. We've now had nine consecutively profitable months on that new daily dollar demand, keeping our costs in line with it. And the business is profitable. Now, is it as profitable as I wanted it to be? No, that was the whole goal of growing the company so that we could grow the profits, grow the business, grow the staff, grow the enterprise, grow the opportunities. And so that's really the segue into the next episode, the transformation. This was the turnaround. And the reason for sharing this is to demonstrate, well, for one thing, we just wanted to be transparent, but there was definitely really, really important things to be learned through this experience. Returning to the fundamentals, fellow stone shop owner, there is a way, you know, it must be done for your company to be successful. And there is a way to delegate that work. That's where we stumbled. We had drifted from what we knew worked. And there is a way to effectively do that, effective delegation. The 3D view and the cost cutting, our costs were out of line with our sales. And so the daily dollar demand that we had was less than our expenses. And so when you get those things into line, you can be profitable. That's just getting profitable. That's not even the ultimate thing that we learned here that I am so excited about sharing in the next episode, episode 54, where we talk about the transformation. Yeah, we turned it around. Yeah, we affirm that these principles do work. They are reliable. They are absolutely concrete. There is a cause and effect in terms of managing your business. There are things that you can do today that will dramatically impact the profitability of your business. But that's not the only goal here. We want to grow. We want to learn. We want to expand. We want to improve ourselves as leaders, and we want to improve our businesses. And that's going to be what we talk about in the next episode. So make sure you check in next week for episode 54, where we discuss the transformation. It sets the stage for the entire next season of the Fab Lab podcast. That's how much I learned from this experience. And so make sure you check back with us next week. And now, Wes, you mentioned a question that we had from the audience, Now we're going to deal with that question. What was the question again?
Yeah, the question comes from Innovate Stones Incorporated from New Jersey. They want to know how to cut costs in the shop.
Well, there's lots of ways to do that. You know, we've just been on this discussion. You know, how do you cut costs or how do you cut costs? You cut them fast and deep. That's in a general sense. But let's talk about your stone shop in and of itself. So I think there are three really straightforward answers to this question. How do you cut costs in your stone shop? Number one, follow lean manufacturing principles. You've got to eliminate waste in your stone shop. Wasted effort, wasted time. We've done a couple of really great videos. If you go to Fabricator's Friend YouTube channel, you'll see a couple of lean manufacturing videos we did for slab staging and handling and your sawing area to eliminate waste and wasted effort to improve productivity. Number two, good tooling. I think a lot of companies, I should say at least some companies, they think they're saving money. They think they're cutting costs by buying cheap tooling, but that cheap tooling doesn't cut as fast, doesn't polish as fast, it isn't as productive, so they actually lose efficiencies. They kind of cut their nose off to spite their face. Trying to save money on tooling actually costs them way more in productivity. So when you buy good tooling, you might spend 10 or 15% more on your diamonds, but you might get 20, 30, 40, 50% more productivity. So you gain massively by spending a little bit more. Number three, nearest and dearest to my heart, being process dependent. If you're not using effective delegation principles like the ones I talked about in my book, Less Chaos, More Cash, if you're not effectively delegating, there is confusion out on your shop floor. You're going to have uncertainty. You're going to have mistakes, unnecessary communication. You're going to have rework. So when you are effectively delegating to every position within your stone shop exactly what tasks they are responsible for and the standards that they have to meet in performing those tasks, your stone shop will become vastly more productive. And in that, in and of itself, cuts costs. It either lowers your expenses in a labor sense or it allows you to produce more with the same amount of labor. So there you go, folks. Innovative Stone, you guys out there in New Jersey, thank you so much for posting that question. Wes, do you have an invitation for the audience for the next episode?
Yeah, if you guys have any other questions, let us know on our Instagram page under Fabricator's Friend or on our Facebook page under Fabricator's Friend as well, and we will address some of those in future episodes.
Fantastic, Wes. And let me say one more thing. If you're dealing with extreme situations in your stone shop right now, if you've got a train wreck on your hands or you're trying to recover from a train wreck and any of the stuff that we talked about today, you'd like to talk about further, send us a private message. Send us a direct message. We'd be more than happy to chat with you on the side, offline. Anything we can do to help you get your stone shop more profitable, that's what we're here for. So ladies and gentlemen, as always, what a privilege it is to spend this time with you fellow fabricators. Until next time, happy fabricating.
Take care.